Thanks, Dean.
Bill, you seem an extraordinarily busy man. Is there one particular thing you think of as your day job?
Oh, certainly the Human Rights Commission. The work I'm doing there around the treaty is quite an important piece of work. And I've been in it 5 years, but I've just seen a lot of change in how people look at the treaty and human rights. I guess human rights issues have been a passion of mine since I was quite young. But in latter years, I've also sort of had a look at some economic opportunities and business opportunities. So Kai and the City is an important part of my life, but probably my day job is still the Human Rights Commission.
So what's a day in your day job involve?
Oh, involves some getting information together and stuff like that, or maybe writing a report for picking up on some of the stuff we've done. The main part of what we were doing was focusing on promoting the human rights dimensions of the Treaty of Waitangi, and a lot of that stuff's unknown. The treaty's not very well known. People are aware of it, but they don't know much about it. The people are sort of aware of human rights, but most people think it happens overseas, and so it's pulling all of those types of things together. We build information packs, we contact people who want to have dialogue, discussions with us. We follow up on some of that stuff and help, introduce people in to build relationships with tangata whenua or other people who can help give content around things Māori or understand the human rights machinery and that sort of stuff. So a lot of that's there.
And you, of course, have the personal experience of having helped negotiate your own iwi treaty claim. How was that experience?
Yeah, it was torturous. It was long. And you sort of go into it full of expectations and hopes. You think that you're going to get fairness and justice and all that, but you're just playing to a formula. I think the driver for it, though, is just what your old people want. They want you to stop grizzling and moaning, and so try and get a settlement and something you can live with. And you have to talk to your own people about that and say, well, look, don't expect justice, don't expect fairness, but expect some acknowledgement that these things happen. Our stories can start being told. We'll have a resource that can revitalise our iwi, our ngārauru iwi, and that sort of stuff. And you put out with that. But they try on a lot of things that you just can't live with. And for example, there's a clause in the settlement that we had where they said that as a result of this, the Crown has dealt fairly and justly with ngārauru, and we had some people at home who just wouldn't accept that, in saying, we will work to restoring the honour of the Crown, but just because we've settled here doesn't mean to say it's fair and just. So you've got to try and broker the peace between our people who are grumbly about that sort of phrase and government insisting that that's how they're behaving and that sort of stuff. So that those are frustrating bits, but we've settled now, and we've got we've got $31 million to play around with. We had a hui over the weekend, and at that hui we decided that we're going to put a sizable chunk on that to revitalising ngārauru, and just having a look at our stories and bringing our people together and improving our communications, improving what we know about ngārauru, because a lot of that stuff's lost to most of the people. I think the biggest surprise for me when I negotiated, even though I'd lived at home from time to time, most of my time has been living in Auckland, Wellington, Northland, all that sort of stuff. And when I started negotiating, you just sort of hear the stories that come out of the land, come out of the people, the old people in particular. And then we had a fairly good team. We negotiated with the Knots, where they did it, Office of Treaty Settlement, where they did a lot of the research for us. And they helped us find the real stories. And so that was quite useful. So we developed a reasonably useful picture of what's happened since 1840 at home. And we got quite an agreed picture, an agreed story, which is in the Act. One of the most successful outcomes for us, though, was negotiating a thing called a paepae rangatira, which requires the Crown to meet with our leaders once a year and just to talk about our relationship and talk about our priorities. And the treaty always intended to develop a relationship between rangatira and Crown leaders, and we've put that into the legislation so we can, it's in effect. And we've had one meeting so far, and it's been very, very positive. We've got to grow up a bit because it's a new experience for us to sit down and say to the Crown, well, we're starting from the basis that we trust you, because that's how those things have to work, and they have to look at us and say the same. In our negotiations, we reckoned that it would take us at least 5 years to trust the Crown as long as they didn't make any mistakes. But we also reckoned it would take them 10 years to trust us because they don't trust us. They don't think we can do things. And so, you know, we need to turn those attitudes around and turn them into positive behaviours. And that's starting slowly to happen at home. I'm not sure what's happening with the Crown on that, but that's...
I've heard the Tribunal described before as potentially a story machine, you know, that gathers and actually tells those stories. And that you've used that word stories about half a dozen times just now. That was obviously a really important part of it.
Well, we had two overarching goals from our when we went into the settlement. Our first one was to make sure our story was told. And, you know, with the telling of the story, we've got the stuff there that our people will know what's happened to us and what we... But it's not just where we've been, it's where we are now, where we're going to in the future, but it's telling those stories. And then the second part of it, which links on to that, is revitalising Ngā Rerutanga. So whatever we did, it had to be sufficient so that we could actually get those stories back into our people and get our people back home, and or wherever they are, they can still continue to live as Ngā Reru people and know where their home base is and all of that sort of stuff. So the stories have been a very, very important part of us knowing who we are as Ngā Reru people.
And yet, on the other hand, the other work you do is you got things like the Māori Education Trust,
yes.
Māori business groups, Kai and the city itself. Mm. Would you call what you do modernising? Are you a moderniser? Is that not the right way to think about it?
I'm not sure what a moderniser does, but certainly I think we can do to, you know, to go forward. And part of it is knowing what's happening. I guess I'm still with the Māori Education Trust because my heart's still in education. I'm an old teacher, ex-teacher. People say an old teacher, and I love teaching. And I think it was the most important thing anyone can do is to teach. I don't think schools are all the best places to teach because there are other contexts for teaching and learning. But and Māori Education's been dear to my heart and all that sort of stuff. So that's why I'm on the Māori Education Trust. And I want us to become a trust that's independent of the government. In the past, we were the old Māori Education Foundation where we had these old scholarships and all of that sort of stuff. And we're looking now to becoming independent of the government, but still to be able to provide support for the educational opportunities for our people. I'm on the iwi Runanga Back Home, and I want us to be able to generate you know, growth in what we got from our settlement and to try and develop the work skills of our people and entrepreneurial opportunities and that sort of stuff. So that's why I'm there. And I'm there to support members of our iwi who want to provide leadership roles in that, because I'm in Wellington, you know, Ngā Reru is 3.5 hours away, and I can't give the time that I can, but I can give a bit of experience to the decision-making forum, so I'm there to help do that and support young leadership coming through to lead us to do that. Kai in the City is just a dream I've had for a long, long time. It's my treaty statement, and it's based on a couple of things. One is putting positive stories out to the world about Māori and Māori cuisine, and Māori, and we focus on manaakitanga, on hospitality, and food's just part of that. So we're not a food restaurant, we're a hospitality restaurant. Mm. And good food's part of it, but that's only part of that whole picture. Nothing more enjoyable to us, this is after they've paid, of course, than people walking out and saying, had a great time, big smile on their face, and us doing it right. So that's a big part of it, and...
Yeah, you at the restaurant, I can't imagine you being able to separate the hospitality and the food. It's all part of one package, isn't it?
Mm, it is. And it's the service as well. When we train our front staff, we always tell them, we always remind them on how they look after people on the marae, where you've got a massive range of people coming on. You've got people who've been there for the first time, and you've got our old aunties and uncles who have been there 1,000 times, and they expect this, that, and the other thing. And they've got a bit of lip and a bit of cheek and a sparkle in their eye, and so we always try and pick up those bits as well, the natural bits, and just making people feel comfortable looking at manaakitanga as being a responsibility. And, you know, not just something you can choose to do. And so we did that.
Do you audition them to see how well they can sing? Even though they're working in the kitchen? Because everyone sings,
well,
don't they?
Well, they do. And we just assume they can. And we've got a couple there who, one's very, sisters. There's a young sister who's in the last year at school and another one who's done some training at and politics and that sort of stuff. And the younger one is very, very much an entertainer. And the older one, she knows everything, and but she sings behind the sink, and the other one will come and sing in the front with us from time to time. So singing's part of it, but even the ones in the back room, whatever songs we're doing, they sing in the background there as well. So, yeah.
Who designed the menu? Because in a way, it's not obvious that you could take traditional Māori food and present it in that way. And it works magnificently, but, I mean, did you have help doing that? Or?
Well, Kai in the City's come out of Kai in the Bay, which we opened up in 2003 and ran for a couple of years. And we had a Cook Island Māori chef there, and he gave us some good leads and all that sort of stuff. The menu that we've got in Kai in the City is a bit different, but it builds on what we learnt there. And I did most of the design stuff for it, but my nephew's one of the chefs, and he and I, you know, he did the chefing stuff, I did the creative stuff, and together we've sort of slapped it together. And but it does, it aims to bring, to tell, you know, once again, stories of the foods and flavours that I had as a kid. And I always remember when I first started Kai in the Bay, or when we started up Kai in the Bay, it sort of started from an idea that we were walking along Queen Street and we called into one of the Japanese fast food places and we got meats on skewers and they poured a bit of sauce and put on a bed of rice. And as we were walking up the road thinking, gosh, you know, this we could use those sauces to bring back the flavours of the things like the middle berries or the totara berries or the taraire berries, the things that we ate as kids. And instead of having, you know, these sorts of things here, we could have watercress and puha that's building around flavouring it. So that was the thinking in that. And because, and then we sort of, when you started putting those ideas onto a bit of paper and shaping them up to think, how will they work? Originally, we thought of getting a lunch bar where you could just pour the juices over any bits of meat, but that it sort of grew into, now we want to enter the cuisine market and tell stories to a wide range of people and all of that sort of stuff. So, and there's some difficulties with that because you try and get eel and it's seasonal, so you put on your menu for a while and all of a sudden it's not there, or mutton birds and those types of things. So we're trying to get those foods out into the mainstream hospitality market and so that New Zealanders and overseas people can enjoy them. And then the thing you find out about them also is that a lot of New Zealanders come in, they have had some of those experiences, but they haven't been mainstreamed into the way they eat and stuff like that. And so this has brought back an experience that they had when they were five. I remember when I was five and Dad was cooking the mutton birds out in the shed and I had a taste and it was horrible, and now I'm going to have a taste that I'm 45 and that sort of stuff. So a lot of that stuff happens.
I get the impression also, and this was the case for me, is that your restaurant was the first place that people actually try mutton bird.
Oh, lots
it's
of
this archetypal New Zealand dish that no one's actually eaten.
I don't know of any other restaurant that's trying to do anything with mutton bird, and we just decided, you know, we thought mutton bird standard. How do we do something with that? And we just sat around a table and talked about it, and I enjoy cooking. I enjoy playing with food, but the chefs don't let me anywhere near the stove, you know, because I'm messy and I don't follow recipes and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I encouraged the push of that, and, you know, and I knew that if we had mutton bird, we had to get rid of the bones, we had to do something about the saltiness and do something about the oiliness. So we talked about all of that stuff, and we came up with the idea of, you know, how we'd boil it, how we'll bake it, you know, because boiling it gets rid of the salt, and the baking it takes off the fat, and how to try and keep it whole, and how to tart it up with some of the other stuff. So we came up with the idea of having a puha stuffing and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, we played around with those types of things.
Mm. Yeah. So who is the clientele? I mean, is it largely tourists, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it is. It's a combination of tourists and Wellingtonians who mainly bring visitors, but some of them just come, you know, because I've heard about us. We got an incredible mention in the Lonely Planet. We were rated as one of the 10 most enjoyable dining experiences in New Zealand in the front part of the book, and in the Wellington section they listed 14 restaurants and, you know, gave them all a little bit of a caption, they gave us the author's choice. They put us in a box section and made a lot of nice comments about the ambience, about the food, about what we're trying, the concept. And said some nice things about the entertainer in there too, which is always nice to have. But they picked us as the author's choice for the Wellington dining area, and we were rapt about that because, you know what, there's some fantastic restaurants and great dining experiences. You know, I know, you know, we may not have the best food in the city and we may not have the best, doesn't we? But we do try and provide a real New Zealand dining experience. And if the, you know, that seems to have been picked up by the Lonely Planet people, that that's what we're trying to do. And we're doing it fairly well. And we're still getting better, but we're doing it fairly well. So it was great to have that. And the Rough Guide's written us well. And a number of other magazines have said, and they've picked up the essence of what we're trying to do without our words, but the essence of what we're doing. So that's cool.
Where can it go from here? Because it's still a fairly small place, the restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, it's hard to imagine how much you could expand and still
and
keep the spirit of it.
Yeah, yeah. Just lately, I've been looking for alternatives for entertainment and putting other people in there. But I always go in there as often as I can because... you know, as my daughter says, Dad, you've got to shake hands and kiss babies. And you know, so I go in there and because I enjoy meeting people, I enjoy talking, I enjoy listening, and I enjoy finding out about people from, you know, other parts of New Zealand, from the rest of the world, and find out what they're coming to this little place for. There's some interesting experiences that you watch for. Sometimes when you get a group of about 18 or 20, you find someone there who's reluctant to be there. And, you know, because they don't think, you know, because you can tell that they're put off by the Māori thing. And they're not curious, they just don't want to know about it. And they stand out like a sore thumb in a crowd, and they don't acknowledge the singing that's happening, and they play hard to get when you're talking to them to try and get an order, and they sit there uncomfortably. And it's always a challenge for me to make them feel comfortable, always a challenge. And so far, there have been no failures. You know, people have seen themselves there. And it's through doing things, you know, things that are slightly familiar and not scary. You know, things like singing Pō Karakariana, you know, which is a New Zealand icon. It's ceased just being a Māori song. It's a New Zealand icon. And other things like, you know, like the foods that we, you know, like, I'm just trying to, you know, hāngi. People have never, you know, like many New Zealanders have had a hāngi, but being able to talk about it in a cuisine setting is quite different, and they're happy to do that. And they use that as relating to, oh, you know, they had a hāngi 3 years ago and it had diesel on it or whatever. But it's linking those stories up as well, and so it's good seeing people change. I always make sure, you know, if I see those people, I go and have a natural conversation with them. I don't have a, are you feeling okay? I just, you know, like... just have a natural conversation, you know, something like, oh, what's the occasion you're here for tonight? You know, so they can give me proper information instead of trying to find out how comfortable they are and all that. And they'll tell me when they're comfortable and uncomfortable, but I just try and find out a wee bit about them and what the group's about, and that generally settles them down. You know, I cease to have two heads and I've only got one head and I've got a kind enough sort of a heart and you know, that sort of stuff. Relationships are a big part in the restaurant too.
I was going to ask you about this. You strike me as someone who's very open and willing to engage. Is that a conscious way that you like to approach things?
I think a couple of things about it, Russell. I think I'm nosy. I think that's one of the things. But I enjoy listening to people. I enjoy finding out about them. And if they want to know stuff about stuff that I know about, I really enjoy telling them about it as well. Because, you know, there's a lot of areas of interest, you know, within my world, and you know, that's probably where I've shifted to from education into Māori and New Zealand development. Because one of the other things too I always look for in the restaurant is the Scots, because I've got a name like Hamilton and I've surely got to have a whakapapa that goes back there, and I always enjoy engaging with Scots people and talking about that, and that just because I think part of the thing is this whole New Zealand thing, you know, like it's got a Māori base, but it's a New Zealand thing that we're engaged in. You know, there are lots of people who eat the stuff I eat and aspire to the same things I aspire to, who are comfortable with using smatterings of te reo Māori with, you know, smatterings of English and whatever they use and stuff like that. And it's I always enjoy seeing people relaxing and getting comfortable around that sort of stuff. So I don't know if it's personable. I don't know, because I also like my own company. I enjoy being by myself. I enjoy watching TV and going to sports games, and I don't always have to have other people around me for that. So I'm not the sort of person who goes out partying and clubbing and stuff like that. I enjoy family and all of that, but when I'm with people like that, I did about 20 odd years as a cabaret entertainer and a band person, and I loved doing the cabaret. I always loved it when the whoever was announcing, you know, I was doing a floor show, for example, and whenever whoever was announcing, "Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Bill Hamilton," and I just loved hearing that, and I loved the light coming on, and I'd transform from this, you know, nervous thing shaking in the background, you know, to someone who was just super confident and just going out there and having a lot of fun. And as soon as the light went off, I went back to my quiet little, you know, just going and having a one-to-one conversation. So, and I think in many, many ways, you know, that's what an entertainer does. I've always been an entertainer and not a musician, and there's a difference. I can play guitar and all that sort of stuff, but I'm not an accomplished musician, but I think I'm a reasonable entertainer. And but I think more than that, I also think that, you know, like I enjoy meeting people and all of that. So the person... and the humanity and the person in front of me, I always try and find that, I guess. I'm quite positive about people in the first instance and always look for the best in people in the first instance until I'm proven wrong. And I enjoy contributing towards making people happy. So I think that's probably what my motivation is.
You've done a lot of things. The restaurant was a dream fulfilled. There's the treaty settlement. Are there any other goals still there ahead of you?
I've got some goals to do with... I want to do different things with the restaurant because, you know, at the moment we seat 30-odd people and I think that, you know, we could manage the same ambience and all that sort of stuff with a place that's twice that size. I'd like to have a go. I think most of my life I've always had two jobs. You know, when I was at school, when I was at school, I was the one who'd look after the boilers in the hostel in the weekend, as well as trying to fit sport in and all that sort of stuff. And I'd always have holiday jobs when I was in the senior at school and all that. When I started teachers' college, I had jobs as barman and I was in bands and things like that. And in my working life, when I was always having my family, when I was teaching, I was a barman and I was doing bands, and I always seemed to have two jobs or two major things on the go. And so what I'm really looking forward to doing is having one thing on the go. And I don't mind, you know, going back to the iwi for a month hui, and you know, perhaps doing a day between the month as well on it. But I'd like to be able to just do one thing and have the family with me doing it. You know, I'm very, very keen. I've got two daughters and a son. I've got three grandchildren, and I love spending time with them. I love spending time with my partner and our little family. So it's a matter of, you know, trying to get all of those things done. I don't have any massive, I don't want to be the next Māori millionaire. I don't have any aspirations to do that. I don't want to be the biggest landowner. I don't want to be the next politician or anything like that. Although I have been involved in politics. I'm a past president of Manamotahake, and I was part of the Alliance when we were in our heyday. And I'm still interested in what happens in the political scene. I particularly like the treaty being, you know, having a voice in Parliament now. Thank goodness the Māori Party's in there to do it. But I think it's also getting the Māori members from the Labour Party stepping up to the mark, and some of the ones from the National Party, Tauhinari and Georgina, you know, they're sort of looking at how they drive Māori policy through their party. So I think Māori issues are in Parliament now, and the treaty is being looked at seriously, I hope. So I think, you know, and I'll always pay a keen eye on to that, how active I get. Time will tell, but I've always got my eye out for a budding politician who I can sponsor and support and all of that, someone young who I'd trust and want in there fighting the battles. And so I've got an eye on politics as well, but not as a politician myself.
Bill, I'll believe you can keep yourself to one job when I see it.
Thanks, Russell.
Cheers.
Kia ora, thanks very much.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, thanks for the easy way. No.